This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 62 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'll randomly talk about administrative-related things to kick off these shows, and I know that you guys hate it. I get it. I'm really sorry that I have to do this sometimes, but I've got to talk about something. Now, I love interacting with you guys during football season. This mailbag show is a way to do just that. It's a way to sort of expose those conversations in an easy-to-digest podcast form. It's a way to come together and just talk about fantasy football. In doing this mailbag show, I've opened up my email inbox to you guys to send in questions for the show. That's why I gave up my email address for this show, for you guys to send in questions for content for the show. Now, I get a lot of questions for this show, and I'm incredibly humbled and grateful for those questions. I think I've probably answered over 95% of them that have hit my inbox, even if they don't make an episode. Because a lot of the questions don't make it to the show because they wouldn't be as enjoyable for a larger audience. I've mentioned in the past that I'm not about the start sit question life for this particular show. For the mailbag show, I don't want to answer start sit questions. The reason's pretty straightforward. I'm trying to dig deeper with this mailbag show. But I also can't imagine what my inbox would be like if I said, hey guys, send all your start sit questions to jj@numberfire.com. If my Twitter mentions were any indication, my inbox would be destroyed. I opened my email inbox to field questions and to help people. I'm a fantasy football analyst. I know this stuff better than most people do, just like a foot doctor knows the human foot better than I do. But not only have I started to get start sick questions, I've started to get legitimate novels as questions, like 2,000 word emails from people. And again, I'm freaking humbled that you guys care so much to write that many words just to get my opinion. That's unbelievable. I just have to be clear with you guys. This is a very, very busy time of year for me. You'd probably guess that. So consuming emails that long and then having to sit back and answer those emails is really difficult for me to do right now. And this is why I want to be upfront about it. When you guys send me those long emails, I feel guilty if I'm not able to respond appropriately. I feel bad because you spent time constructing that email to me. So I'm trying to sort of stop that before it starts, so that neither of us are put in a crappy situation, so that you're not wasting your time writing 2,000 words, and I'm not feeling bad that I can't dissect your 20 questions for you. I really hope that makes sense. I wanna help, I wanna interact, I wanna do all of the above. And I try to do all of the above through my email, through Twitter, and through Facebook Lives that we do on the NumberFire Facebook page. I just ask that you understand that I sleep very little throughout the football season, and that things are incredibly busy. I'm basically a zombie right now. You're listening to a zombie. I appreciate it though, guys. And I appreciate you all continuing to listen to this podcast. It's a lot of fun to do, and it is a very humbling thing to do. Today's a mailbag show, but before digging into this week's questions, I want to remind you about this really cool contest that you guys should participate in over on FanDuel. If you listen to this podcast, you might have thought, this guy doesn't know anything. I could beat him in fantasy football. Well, now's your chance. Because every week after week six, me, Brandon Gadula, and Jim Sonnis will be playing against FanDuel Friends Mode commissioners in the NumberFire Showdown. To qualify, just be a FanDuel Friends Mode League commissioner and have your contest run for cash. That gets you into the $1,000 commish free play the next week. Finish in the top three in the free play, and you'll take on me, Brandon, and Jim the following week. If you win, you get $1,000 or more. But if one of us experts wins, you don't get anything. Instead, FanDuel adds $500 to the next week's prize pool until a commish claims it. If you want to learn more about how you can play against me in this special FanDuel contest, you can visit FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. That's FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. Do it, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now let's dig into this week's mailbag questions. This first one's from Twitter, @NotInYourLeague. How do you see the Saints backfield playing out without AP, and how do you see the AP playing out in Arizona? So I talked about AP a bit on the top of the Start Sit show this week, but I'm not very high on him. He's essentially going to take on Chris Johnson's role. He won't be the primary pass catcher in the offense because Andre Ellington is there, and the offensive line for the Cardinals has been a mess. And Adrian Peterson's 32 years old. He should see some volume, but I'm not viewing him as anything more than a flex option this season. Regarding Kamara and Ingram, I do have some thoughts. I talked about this on the Start Sit show too, but without AP, there's definitely a sense of confidence that you should now have with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. even though AP wasn't seeing a ton of work, there was always the chance that he would start seeing more work. I mean, outside that Miami game in week four, AP was on the field for about 20-ish percent of the Saints snaps this year. That's nothing to just ignore. Now, between Kamara and Mark Ingram, I like Mark Ingram more from here on out. Kamara's played more than 40% of New Orleans snaps in just one game this year, and it came all the way back in week one. Mark Ingram's been on the field for 42, 54, 50, and 62% of the team snaps this year per game. He is just on the field more. And we know how these two backs profile. Kamara's a fantastic pass catcher, while Ingram can handle a lot of that early down work. Kamara may end up catching over 70 passes this year because the Saints love to utilize their backs out of the backfield through the air, but Ingram will probably out-touch him overall each week. I think that both of these backs, from a half and full PPR standpoint, are fringe top 15 options from here on out. I think they could both be top 15 running backs from here on out. It's possible to think that because of the usage that we see out of the New Orleans backs. The Saints have been the friendliest team to pass catching backs over the last decade. And the other thing I just want to note very quickly is that I actually think the Saints defense is better than what the consensus thinks. And that could also feed into both of these backs a little bit more. This next one's from Twitter, at Marcella Somers. What's your strategy for kickers? Always seems like a crapshoot to me. There's definitely a process involved in picking the right kicker, you guys. People write them off, but there are ways to increase your chances on hitting on the right guy. Think about what needs to happen in order for a kicker to be usable in fantasy football. He, one, needs to be on a team that can get into scoring position, and two, needs to be on a team that's likely to win. The first point is pretty easy to understand. If there aren't field goal attempts, there aren't field goals. If there aren't touchdowns, there aren't extra points. But the second point is just as important. A kicker can be a monster, but it doesn't matter if the team is trailing throughout the second half of a game. If the Ravens are down 28 at the half, Justin Tucker isn't going to see the field on 4th-and-2 from the opponent's 35-yard line. He's not going to be kicking that 50-plus yard field goal. They're going to go for it. They won't play conservatively with their kicker. So from a process standpoint, look at good offenses who are going to score points, and look at teams who are projected to win. Someone like Brandon McManus or Will Lutz come to mind this week. This next one is from Eric. He says, hey JJ, love both pods and I enjoyed the to-the-point approach with the late round podcast. Thanks, man. My question is difficult for me to articulate. I'm wondering, when you draft and then manage multiple teams through the season, do you tend to strictly follow your process and advice for all leagues, adjusted for scoring nuance, of course, or do you diversify your exposure? In week three, I couldn't live with having my beloved Eagles D on every team. Rationally, I agreed with the process, but as a fan, I had seen them lay an egg too many times when they were the overwhelming favorite. Again, in week four, I saw I had Cutler on three teams and realized I wanted to spread some of my risk to Watson as well. So how do you handle managing transactions for multiple teams week in and week out? Eric. Well, Eric, I'll say this. I certainly don't change my lineup based on fandom. I get why people do it, but that's just not what I do because I think that it's suboptimal. Aside from that, though, yes, I think it's no different than how folks approach a GPP in daily fantasy. You know there's natural variance in fantasy football. So if you can account for that through your multiple leagues, you go for it. I actually draft that way as well, but only because I'm in more leagues than I should mention on air. I treat things like you would a stock portfolio. You diversify. Maybe you invest more in a particular stock, but you're not going all in usually. Because I'm going to be wrong. You know, for instance, I wasn't that high on Todd Gurley entering the year. I had him at like RB9, but I didn't feel good about having him at RB9. But I still drafted Todd Gurley because I'm going to be wrong. And I was wrong. Todd Gurley's good this year. The whole Rams offense is doing a lot more than I thought that they were going to do. So I'm glad that I went with that approach. I'm glad that I embraced variance. With that being said, usually things like the waiver wire are approached similarly throughout my leagues. You want hot running backs and wide receivers off the waiver wire, no matter the format and no matter your diversity. The other thing I want to say on this topic is similar to DFS too. When you diversify during the draft, you generally want to diversify your early round picks more than your late round ones. It's similar to how you don't want to go all in on an expensive DFS player. Because if that player bombs, you're in terrible shape. You're hoping that cheaper options pan out, and we know that cheaper options aren't better options. There's a correlation between price and how good the player is. There's a reason for that. And if that player bombs in season long, it's the same thing. Whereas you can take a hit if a cheap dude or a later round pick in season long ends up busting. It's not that big of a deal then. This next one's an email from John. Hi JJ, I haven't heard this discussed before, so I'm not sure if it's common practice or if I'm the only crazy guy who does this. This sounds interesting. I started doing it a few years ago and it's been helpful in a few instances. I will sometimes drop my kicker on Tuesday night and claim an extra running back like Wayne Gallman this week or Alex Collins last week. The player is usually one who has not seen so much NFL action before and is a bit of an unknown, but there are rumors that he might get extra touches this week. What I'm really looking to do is see how many touches he will get in, ideally, an afternoon game, and then pick up a kicker for the Sunday night or Monday night game. It's obviously important to make sure that those options exist. In some instances, the player only plays a few snaps or looks terrible and they can be dropped in favor of a kicker. Once in a while, they look great and become someone to hold on to. At that point, someone else will have to be dropped from my roster. And even less likely, but it did happen last week, the matchup was lopsided in my favor and I never even picked up a kicker. Like I said, I'm just curious to know if you've heard of anyone else doing this or if you've tried it yourself. John in Alexandria, Virginia. I mean, I think one thing more people need to start doing is dropping their kicker for a waiver wire asset in general. In the majority of my leagues, I don't have a kicker until Sunday morning. I'll take a flyer on someone, as you said, who might have some upside in that given week, or even sometimes just a handcuff on the off chance that someone gets hurt in practice or something. You never know. Basically anyone outside of a kicker, because it's such a replaceable position in fantasy football. I haven't done the wait to get a kicker for the Sunday night or Monday night game though, because most of my leagues lock. Am I reading this correctly? Shouldn't your leagues lock? Shouldn't the players on your team lock after they play? You shouldn't be able to drop a player after they've already played. So that would be the downside here. If you wait until Sunday night for a kicker, then you'll need to drop someone. But if everyone on your roster has already played, then you'd be without a kicker. Maybe I'm misunderstanding it a bit, but we both agree on this strategy overall. Utilize your kicker spot as a safety net throughout the week or an upside play. You know, if your running back is kind of injured, get his backup until Sunday. And then when it's announced that he's fine and he'll play, drop the backup for a kicker. Sometimes though, that running back isn't always healthy. This next one is from at FFMJ18. Serious question. Who do you like rest of season, Tymont or Aaron Jones? I got this question a lot this week, and even at FFMJ18's tweet got like 5 likes from people, so I'm assuming folks really want takes on this Green Bay backfield. So let me just brain vomit here for a second. What do we know about Ty Montgomery? Well, he's a converted wide receiver who's been playing running back for less than a year. Last year, he was a pretty efficient running back, though. He had a 45.45% success rate. That's far above average, and it was way better than any of the other running backs in the Green Bay backfield. Granted, the running backs in the Green Bay backfield were terrible. This season, Tymont's success rate is still really, really good. It's at 47.83%. The average running back usually sees a 40% success rate. He has not been bad whatsoever. In fact, he's been great. So the people out there saying Ty Montgomery isn't a good running back or he's not cut out for it, that's not fair to say. There's no evidence that suggests that. Ty Montgomery has only played well. Prior to his rib injury, he was playing an absurd amount of Green Bay snaps and he was seeing one of the better workloads in the NFL. Literally 2 weeks ago, Ty Montgomery was a great RB1 in fantasy football. And then Aaron Jones happens. I love Aaron Jones. I loved him a ton as a prospect. I talked about him on this podcast right after the draft happened. I talked about him on Twitter, yada, yada, yada. So full disclosure, I think he's very good and I think he's going to dig into Ty Montgomery's role because I think that Aaron Jones is very good. I'm not basing this off of just the last 2 weeks. I have thought Aaron Jones has been good for a while now. And for as good as Ty Montgomery's success rate numbers are, Aaron Jones has actually been better. Aaron Jones, guys, is breaking NumberFire's database right now. And Aaron Jones, unlike Ty Montgomery, actually has a history of being a running back. That's important here. The reason I loved Aaron Jones and why my model loved Aaron Jones is because he had good athleticism, but an awesome, awesome production profile. I don't care that he went to UTEP. Elite production profiles are madly important when evaluating prospects. A good running back in the NFL usually was good at the college level. Very rarely do we find a good NFL running back who's seen consistent work and consistent production who did not produce at the college level. It's not a surprise. If someone's good at something, they were probably good at something similar before becoming this good at something. Most doctors were probably smart in high school and college. They're smart people. That's why they become doctors. Back-to-back Stanley Cup champion Sidney Crosby was good at hockey since he was like 4 years old. Tiger Woods was always good at golf. These players are good before they reach the professional level. So it's not a shock that good production profiles translate to the NFL level. I've never understood why people ignore something like that. It doesn't make any sense to me. Sometimes you're gonna get a guy who only played college basketball and then all of a sudden plays tight end at the NFL level without ever playing football in his life. Sometimes that happens. But that's also an outlier. That doesn't happen all that often. Aaron Jones was a very good running back prospect. Just because he's a fifth round pick doesn't mean he can't be good. NFL teams get things wrong all the time. And that was my big beef with people who just assumed that Jamal Williams was the handcuff to Ty Montgomery. Yes, he was the handcuff, but he wasn't the better running back than Aaron Jones. Just because he was drafted in the fourth round rather than the fifth round doesn't make him better. The difference between the fourth round and the fifth round is almost nothing. We're not talking about the first round or the second round. We're not talking about the second round or the third round. We're talking about random rounds in the NFL draft. They're throwing darts at that point. And it just so happens that Green Bay's dart throw was on a very good running back in Aaron Jones. Like, if we look at these players strictly as prospects, Aaron Jones is better than Ty Montgomery. It's just that Ty Montgomery was the starter coming into the year, and Ty Montgomery isn't a rookie, and he's played more than a game and a half at the NFL level. From strictly a prospect standpoint, Aaron Jones was a better running back. I don't know how that would be debatable, but they're both really good. So where does that bring us? Well, here's the problem. Running back value in fantasy football is totally volume driven. And like I've said before, volume comes from coaches play calling and having those running backs on the field. Right now, we don't entirely know what the Packers are thinking. Even if Aaron Jones is better than Ty Montgomery, they could roll Ty Mon out there for 90% of the team snaps, and that would make Aaron Jones irrelevant. So I suppose the question you guys are asking right now is, how do we value these guys moving forward? Given all of this, given this brain vomit that just went on, how do we value these guys? I think the best approach is to assume a split backfield, but you still want a piece of that backfield because not only could both of them still be viable from a fantasy perspective, but one of them could emerge. The bottom line with any of this is that you kind of want to play the extremes. This is still a game theory thing. If someone in your league thinks that Aaron Jones won't be involved in the offense anymore and they own Aaron Jones, then trade for Aaron Jones. And on the flip side, if the Ty Montgomery owner doesn't like Ty Montgomery because of Aaron Jones's emergence, then trade for Ty Montgomery. I want a piece of both of these guys in case one of them emerges. Because as we saw with Ty Montgomery to start this year and towards the end of last year, the running back in Green Bay is going to be fantasy viable. And at the very least, both of them should be flex options. I know it's kind of a lame answer, but I think that it's the true one. I think that's how you approach this situation. That's why sending trade offers is always a smart thing to do. This next one is from Dylan. Hey JJ, this past week we had a team in our Dynasty League that is in full rebuild mode start Jack Doyle, even though Doyle was listed as out at least 2 days before Sunday. The team ended up losing by just 1 point, and people aren't very happy that the team's owners, two guys co-owned, neglectfulness resulted in the other team winning. The rebuilding team doesn't have their own 2018 first, so they aren't losing on purpose. But they have no chance this year and admitted that they didn't check their lineup at all. This is a very active dynasty league that's been going on for 10 plus years. As commissioner, how do you deal with this sort of thing? Unfortunately, I get questions like this pretty often, and it's really obnoxious that people do this. This kind of stuff pisses me off so much. If you're joining a fantasy football league, stop being so self-absorbed that just because your team sucks, that everyone has to suffer as a result of that. It ruins the game for everyone. It's such an arrogant thing to do. So if I'm the commissioner of that league, if I'm you, Dylan, I'm hitting up those owners, I'm telling them that this is their first and final strike, and if they do it again, peace out. They're done. They're cut. They're not in the league anymore. And I don't think that's a ridiculous way of approaching it either. This last one is from @FLPivot. What's been the best pants-off moment this season so far? I think two come to mind. The first one is the most obvious, and that's Kareem Hunt's week one performance. I was pretty vocal about how much I liked Hunt this offseason, even before the Spencer Ware injury, because he, like Aaron Jones, was pretty strong in my prospect model. And I thought that they traded up for Kareem Hunt for a reason. But the thing is, you can't expect this about Kareem Hunt and for Kareem Hunt in your wildest dreams. Anyone who says, I knew Kareem Hunt would be a top three fantasy running back this year is lying. You can like the dude, but you're not predicting elite output. This does not happen often. So when he did what he did in week one, I went nuts. I'm a fan of the game too, guys. Even though I'm analyzing this stuff and have to have a level head, I love when we see such awesome talent emerge. Whether I was on that player or not, I don't care. It's just great to see. The other moment this year that forced me to take my pants off was a little bit more depressing. I was into Jay Cutler against the Jets back in week 3, and for those of you who listen to my other podcast, Living the Stream, he was one of the top streamers that week. 2 years ago on that podcast, we, my podcast co-host Denny Carter and I, recommended streaming Nick Foles against the Steelers. Needless to say, it did not work out, and we still hear crap about it to this day. It's become really hilarious, and our listeners are awesome about it. I love it. But now, every week three, the listeners remember it as Nick Foles week. So our streamer has to perform in order to not fall victim to the week three curse. Cutler was falling victim to it. But at the end of the game in garbage time, he threw a touchdown to Devontae Parker and he salvaged his fantasy day. I was very, very relieved, so I took my pants off. That's the last question for this week, though. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to this show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And don't forget to leave a rating and review on iTunes. Of the people that have left a rating and review, one of you will be the winner of a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'll be drawing your name at the end of the month. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your weekend, and enjoy week 6.